This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture. Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12 on Joy 94.9.
Oh, it's all fun here, isn't it, Tess? It's all fun here. You are on Saturday Magazine with Macca and Tess.
Macca, you sound pained.
Oh, look, you know, look, our next subject, I think I'm going to get into. We've been having a bit of a rant.
Do you mean the subject or the guest?
Well, I don't know. I can multitask. But
okay, I'm going to intervene. We are going to be chatting with Nick Hollis. Nick Hollis is a writer and a HIV activist. I think you're also the CEO of Tim, aren't you?
Oh, I'd love to be the CEO if such a role existed. I am the co-founder. You can follow the paper trail and the budget trail. There's unfortunately no CEO, nor is there a handsome CEO wage, I'm so sad to say. But I am the co-founder, and it's an honour and a privilege to be so.
And Tim is the Institute of Many.
Correct.
What is the Institute of Many?
The Institute of Many, or Tim, is a grassroots movement for people living with HIV, and we are now the largest grassroots movement of its kind here in Australia, with the largest membership of any HIV organisation, which is not a responsibility we take too lightly these days.
And so what's its purpose and function? What's it do that's different from, say, Living Positive Victoria or Thorn Harbour Health?
Well, we love Thorn Harbour Health. I'm still getting used to saying that, of course. And Living
T-H-H.
Positive Victoria.
T-H-H.
It's harder to say than VAC, isn't it? VAC just rolls out like a little word.
And THH.
I agree with you saying.
THH, it's like the.
No, to me, it's like THC. And of course, I have no interest in THC, as you know.
Of course.
I guess to answer your question, to come back to talking about, we work with these organisations. These are legacy organisations who have been around since the beginning of the HIV/AIDS epidemic, and we're really working alongside them. When Tim was formed 6 years ago, I think it was a very different time. We knew that undetectable viral loads were a great barrier to preventing HIV transmission. We didn't have the full science, but we knew it worked. We didn't have PrEP yet. And the HIV conversation in Australia, I think, had really settled into a bit of a funk. We needed some renewal. We needed some the next generation to step up. And Tim became a really great platform to encourage that level of leadership.
And look, I agree, Nick. I think one of the challenges that we face as a community from the very early days around HIV to now is how the virus has changed, but the community ideas and expectations around how we deal with it and how we treat it have sometimes lagged, and that as the virus has changed, that the community hasn't necessarily changed at the same pace, and in terms of how we think of it and how we, we need to...
So you're talking about attitudes to HIV,
attitudes. Treatments change, and sometimes, obviously they lag from time to time, but attitudes...
Nick, what's your
how
view
they
about
lag?
That?
Oh, absolutely, and it's really easy when you're at the coalface of the HIV response to get frustrated with with how long it's taking for people to come around. I mean, we know now that the risk of an HIV-positive person with an undetectable viral load is zero to pass on, and we know that. But we're also dealing with something that, an epidemic that is older than I am, and that's generations and decades of rusted-on fear and belief and trauma, and that part of that trauma gets inherited, gets passed down the line. So it's a massive thing for people to wrap their head around, and we don't take that too lightly, but we do have to just keep telling the truth and creating pathways for people to come with us, and ideally, hopefully, leaving no one behind in that conversation.
And so in shifting attitudes, what are the ingredients that you use to actually try to achieve that?
Oh, it's been worked up over a few years. These days, I can say patience. A few years ago, I would have said it. I don't know if I would have said that. You need to remember that there is a person on the other side of that conversation happening. And when it's in person, it's so much easier, of course. A big part of what Tim does is that our dialogues happen online. So we've seen some huge blues. I've been a part of some massive arguments within the Tim space and just on social media in general over the years. And it's really easy to forget that that avatar and that comment thread has people behind them, those human beings, and they've all got their experience and lived experience in the conversation. So we try and keep that in mind, but we also don't allow things to just sit there and fester and allow toxic attitudes or negative attitudes to dominate the space. In Tim, one of our values is that if you've got a problem, you can talk about it in Tim, but we do ask you to be at least remotely proactive, even if that proactivity is saying, I could really use some help, as opposed to just getting on Tim, having a rant, complaining that, you know, no one on Scruff wants to have sex with you because you're HIV positive or whatever, that's your experience. You might be feeling that, but let's figure out how we can use this movement of people living with HIV to support one another so that we don't have to feel and think that way anymore.
And so what's your attitude to this whole idea that there are people out there who don't want to have sex with people who are HIV?
Well, I think it's great. I'm glad they're putting their hands up so we can corral them all off into one side and we can find each other and all have sex with each other and have lots of fun, and they can be over there in the corner and being miserable.
That's a very positive response.
It's very glib. It's very glib, I know. My lovely friend Jordan once said, I don't want to waste Beyonce tickets on someone who doesn't want to be with me. The thing about an HIV diagnosis is it does reveal other people's fears. It's a mirror for that fear for another person. And sometimes it reveals the sort of person who might not have at that point in their life an open mind to being with someone. But, you know, would you reject someone because they have diabetes? Would you reject someone because they suffer from a mental health condition? Like, at what point does someone's chronic condition impact who they actually are as a person? We've seen massive leaps in those attitudes shifting. I think PrEP's played a huge part in it. U equals U and undetectability has played a huge part in it. And that zero divide, as we call it, is certainly narrowing, and that's really exciting.
Mm. Now, let me throw a grenade here.
Mm.
I was just thinking, because we're talking about, our new federal government and the Prime Minister and his challenger who didn't win, they're not friends of our community, and I wouldn't imagine they're big friends of anything to do with HIV education and dare I say it, prevention. That the fact that, you know, a person with an undetectable viral load is entirely safe to have sex with, that sort of wouldn't please them, because that takes away one of the fear factors that they want to use around HIV to demonise it.
Yeah, well, fear's their main weapon, isn't it?
You know, is that a reasonable, or am I drawing too long a bow?
Well, it's really hard to say, because it's tricky to get people to openly talk about their feelings these days. You know, people living with HIV, though, we have seen, and not specifically by the failed Prime Minister attemptee, Dutton, and our Prime Minister, or he's the Prime Minister now, not the Prime Minister-elect, designate, Scott Morrison. But we certainly saw last year during the marriage equality fight, the homophobic, transphobic, biphobic, queerphobic individuals who would use HIV as an excuse for why we shouldn't get marriage equality. And so what that reveals to me is that these people will use absolutely anything. Against us. I'm not saying specifically this about Peter Dutton or Scott Morrison. I mean Scott Morrison did say, did acknowledge HIV in this year's budgetary address when PrEP was put onto the PBS, and he talked about it as a good thing. And really, when it comes down to it, I feel like these particular individuals are neoliberal more than they are liberal. And we can make, and I don't like necessarily having to make it.
What does that mean? What does neoliberal mean?
Well, we can make an economic argument for why treatment and as prevention and as PrEP and U equals U is so valuable to the budget, to the economy. And sadly, that's the way I think some people view us as numbers in a spreadsheet more than human beings with lived experience. But if that gets us over the line and that funds PrEP and that keeps universal access to HIV treatment happening, I'm happy to make that argument too. We've got to think about all the different ways.
It's not dissimilar to the old argument that money spent on education is money better spent than, you know, when the cost of a new HIV infection is whatever it is, hundreds of thousands of dollars to the health system, that actually spending money on PrEP, you know, would appeal to the economic rationalists.
Well, it does.
Because they'd much rather we didn't have sex at all.
Yeah.
Like, ever.
Well, if we're going to do it, it's a form of harm reduction then in a strange sort of way. But, you know, the thing about funding PrEP is that, you know, I'm a person living with HIV and unless there's some pretty significant shifts in universal healthcare in this country, the government is going to have to fund my HIV treatment until either the day I die or there's a cure.
Yeah.
With PrEP, of course, people are going on what we call seasons of risk. You know, you might take PrEP for the rest of your life, you might need it, or you might possibly have it for the next couple of years whilst you're in a particular, you know, swell of romance, shall we say, and then you might settle down into a relationship and things might shift.
Swell
of romance.
or drowning in it. Yeah. I think some people are absolutely drowning in it these days, thanks to PrEP too. So that's a really important thing to keep in mind as well.
Everyone needs to be given a shower cap test.
Or just take a shower.
Yeah. In terms of with, you know, HIV and the future, what do you see, Nick, as going to be the biggest challenge for the next generation, the generations that follow us? What's the big challenge?
I think we're looking here at a generational challenge, and it's a significant one. The experience of our elders who survived the AIDS crisis, whether they live with HIV or not, carry with them a very particular complex set of experiences, and the younger generation on PrEP or living with HIV today can't imagine what that time was like.
Yes.
We have to figure out a way to keep remembering the lessons that we've learnt, and to keep, you know, not only the memories alive of those who've been lost, but also to honour the experiences of those still with us. And then acknowledge at the same time that it's a completely different set of circumstances. Mm. And what I see and what's interesting to me at the moment is that there is a lack of, I would say, appreciation, understanding, in some ways respect for some people on PrEP who don't quite acknowledge or realise that the drugs that they take that have liberated them from the fear of HIV were hard won, and you know, people living with HIV and AIDS put their bodies on the line for us to have these drugs these days. And what I'm conscious of is not allowing a kind of serophobic set of attitudes to develop in the PrEP community. So I'm pretty passionate about that as well.
Wow, that's going to take a bit of work.
It does. It does. Thankfully, we're still here. And no matter, you know, we're not going anywhere anytime soon. And I think that's a really important lesson about this post-marriage equality world. Mm. We still have so many fights to address.
It's not over yet.
Nothing's over. Of course not. Look, we're all here. We're still here. We've all got a lot to say, don't we?
This, you know, I classify where we are in our fight. We're at the end of the beginning, but not the beginning of the end.
That's right.
And, you know, we need to remember, you know, what you said about, you know, perhaps people on PrEP becoming a bit blasé or a bit, well, you know, actually it's all good and not understanding how this has come about. It's a bit like the fight, you know, that we've all had over many generations for rights for our community.
Mm.
That Tass and I, as sanctimonious old windbags, often like to muse sometimes, oh, well, you know, all the young queers, you know, they don't realise, you know, the journeys we've had and everything. Well, perhaps they don't. But, well, it is always good to, you know, remind or share with these folk is, you know, you are actually, you know, you're in a good place. But it's not always going to stay a good place. You need to be vigilant and you need to understand that you need to be ready to stand up and be counted and to fight, because there are always forces that want to, you know, that want the revolving door to go back the other way. They want us to go back in side. They don't want us to be able to.
No, that's right. Mm. And they don't want us to be invisible. They don't want to hear. They don't have to see or hear us.
And I also think that the need to stand up and fight is going to get more complex and more varied as more aspects of the queer community become increasingly visible, more articulate about their needs, and they might be slightly different to the needs and wants that we had 5, 10, 15,
sure.
20 years ago.
Sure.
But it's about that notion of solidarity and intersectionality that to me is really, really important.
So, Nick, what's next?
What's next? Well, tomorrow I am doing a talk about all of this and more as part of the Melbourne Writers Festival called Sex Sells.
Yes,
good on you.
Which is very exciting. So that's tomorrow. And then from here, well, with Tim, we're just getting bigger and bigger. We've just come back from presenting our U equals U campaign at the International AIDS Conference in Amsterdam, which we're really excited to see that it's been acknowledged as kind of best practice for the way to do U equals U campaigns and community organizing internationally, so that made us feel quite lovely. And now what we're trying to do is we're trying to get more acknowledgements of U equals U happening federally. We'd love to see the federal government endorse it. We'd love to see the City of Melbourne endorse it. We've already seen the Victorian government endorse it, and that's really exciting. So it's about staying visible.
You might need to wait for a new federal government, of course.
Well, we'll see how we go. maybe now's the time. They're not... you know, they must be pretty distracted. You could just slip something,
And before we let you go, do you have any reflections on yesterday's shenanigans?
Oh, my goodness. I was glued to it. I think the... apart from the fact that we, you know, it was the choice ultimately between two former immigration ministers who are responsible for human rights atrocities, and no good could come from either of them in that position. I think at least the hard war battle that was waged by the far right of that party and conservative media, they lost yesterday. They lost by not getting Peter Dutton in, and that is at least a great self. Goal of theirs and sucked in, I can say, just sucked in.
Yeah, Alan Jones and Ray Hadley, they got out of bed and they trod on their own nuts.
They sure did. They all did, really. So at least we can take solace from that, but not much else. Let's get to election ASAP.
Yeah. Nick Hollis, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your work. It's really important work. I know you're not going to give it up. Stay at the coalface and... We all need to remember that the fight never ends. It never ends. If you think it's ended and you give up, they'll sneak up on you. Trust me. Seen it before. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you in the studio.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.